You're listening to A Feast for Thrones, a weekly Game of Thrones podcast that analyzes and dissects every single episode of Game of Thrones. On this week's episode, it is John, Maester John. How are you, John?
I am very well.
That's hey, Nick. Great.
Hey, Nick.
Yeah?
Hello!
You clown me every single time I do that intro. It actually throws me off so much. So just for everyone that's listening, when I do those intros, John just sits there and smiles with his biggest shit-eating grin on earth because he knows that he's going to clown it every single time. But I'm okay with you clowning it at this stage because, you know, we're coming to the end of Game of Thrones. So
again, good segue back into what we're meant to be discussing.
Yeah, that's right. I think we've got an episode that's divisive this week. So we're going to try and do a bit more of a structure to this episode. This was John's idea because generally we approach these episodes with just talking about what we want to talk about. And that kind of free flow conversation is fun. But I think this episode deserves a bit of structured conversation.
Yeah. And I think if we were to ramble, it would just be 2 hours and 20 minutes of shitting on it.
Yeah.
No one wants to listen to us shit on it for that long. So, you know, we'll try and keep our structure in check.
Yeah. So, I figured we'll start with what was good about the episode because I think at the end of the day, there are a couple of things that I really, really liked as part of this episode. I don't think it's worse than Last of the Starks, but that's because I've got the context of like these two episodes now. I understand how these things operate and we'll go into sort of the plot holes and the differences and that sort of stuff a bit later. But I found some of the actual character moments quite sweet. I thought Tyrion and Jaime in the prison tent was really nice. Arya and the Hounds in the map room, again, really, really nice. The whole meme of Clegane Bowl, I never really bought into it, but I honestly thought it was beautifully shot. A little bit clanky and could have been executed a little bit better when it came to the Hound and the Mountain's End. But I think when I look at that sort of in terms of hype, I think a lot of people were probably let down by it.
Sure.
Everyone I've spoken to has been like, yeah, like it was good, but not like nowhere near the levels that people were expecting. I think people were kind of expecting like the Mountain and the Viper. They're in an arena together and they're fighting. And I think that's what people were expecting. And instead they got this sort of this doomsday final fight between them. But I've rewatched scenes of the episode on YouTube. I haven't rewatched the episode generally. Like, I'll rewatch the episode a couple of times before we start taping. But this was another one that I don't feel compelled to watch yet. And I think it's probably because I'm still trying to digest some
I think there were things, as you say, that I liked. And the two things that I really liked about this episode were the visual effects,
yes,
which were absolutely incredible. They were phenomenal, and we can talk about specific ones, and some of the acting performances were absolutely incredible. Maisie Williams, I think, has been phenomenal since the beginning of the show, and she upped her own game tenfold in that episode. She started that show as a child when Lena Headey was a very experienced, prolific actress, and probably, apart from, you know, say, Sean Bean, perhaps, one of the biggest known names in the show when it started. And Maisie Williams matched her performance last night.
I agree.
Say that to, like, disrespect Lena Headey. Like, I say that to honor them both. Like, she was incredible.
I was going to say, yeah, it's like almost an honor, really. Like,
and Emilia Clarke also was really committed to something that was very difficult to achieve. She was given awful writing.
You should see John. He's rubbing his eyes.
It just, like, yeah. She was really, not just Daenerys. Emilia Clarke was shit on by that script. She was really decimated. There's no justification for not setting up that inevitable arc for Daenerys better. And yet, she gave a really beautiful, layered, committed performance in spite of the fact that she had terrible words to do and things put in terrible words put into her mouth and terrible things to do. So the things that I liked about this episode, yeah, were the visual effects and the phenomenal, outstanding acting performances. I like what you said about some of the pairings. Arya and the Hound, I think, were fantastic. Tyrion and Jaime, I felt like, and we can get into it in the plot hole part, But I think the bad writing in that scene and Tyrion's absolute stupidity yeah. meant that even their acting couldn't save that for me. I just thought this is disgraceful.
I did think it did eat away at that a little bit. I think the sort of the emotional heft of it. But
and like, I didn't really understand, you know, like in the years and years ago when they were talking about Tyrion being married to someone that his father and brother then killed. Jaime wasn't really your friend in childhood. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You were the only one who was there for me and didn't treat me like a monster. That's actually bullshit, mate. Like,
yeah.
You're treated like a monster by everyone, including Jaime. So
he was the outcast from birth.
That's you have forged a brotherly bond since the beginning of this show.
Yeah.
But it wasn't there all along. So this just retconning rubbish. Even their acting couldn't save that. But as I say, we'll have so much time to talk about things that were crap. I thought that some of the acting performances were absolutely stellar. And someone said something to me today at work. They said that the best conversations that in season 8 of Game of Thrones have been conversations with no dialogue. And she was saying that to shit on the writing. But
it's,
you know,
true, but I mean, it's a good observation.
It is a good observation because, you know, Sansa and Tyrion in the crypts a few episodes ago, and the one I'm thinking of here is Lena Headey's single tear
was in the key?
Incredible. Yep. Maisie Williams just running through the streets of King's Landing for 7 minutes, and such a contrast to Boss Arya in episode 3,
yeah,
who was fighting a supernatural horde of zombies who, you know, essentially like a computer game boss. And when it came to human struggle, as she was shifting back from being hardcore, cold, compassionless, disturbing assassin into becoming more human and more Arya Stark again, as the destruction of humanity was being caused by humanity, not by something, you know, I know obviously there was a dragon, but it was... it was a human cause. It wasn't like an ultimate other evil.
Yeah.
She was genuinely terrified as a human. And I thought she was actually, as far as the writing went, her arc was probably the most plausibly handled by the whole episode.
Yeah, I think when I look at her sort of run in this particular episode, I find her journey really interesting because she has that moment with the Hound before they go up into the keep. And she's like, I'm going to kill Cersei. And she's basically zoned in. She's in that sort of assassin mode. And then the Hound's like, no. Like, he sees, like, he knows that she is not... She's cut out for it, but she's not cut out for it. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I think he knows that she's cut out for it, but she'll die. You know, he's saying, like, this is your moment to make a choice. You don't have to be a faceless, cold assassin. You can be Arya Stark. And she decides to do that. And...
reminds me a little bit of Ned.
Like, yeah. Yep. I actually, not just Maisie Williams' acting performance, but I actually thought Arya's entire arc in this episode, I really liked. I thought she was the best thing about it.
Yeah. The thing is that watching the behind the scenes before we started taping, we were watching that, and there's that sort of sequence where they were showing us the one shot through King's Landing. And you know, I couldn't help but just be floored by how she was able, like she was amping herself up, like Maisie Williams amping herself up before the take started. And then as soon as it was in, she was straight into it. And it really carries across the sort of horror that Dany was inflicting onto King's Landing.
Yeah, sure. I mean, absolutely. And Maisie Williams was incredible at conveying that. But I also think, you know, for Arya to make that decision with the Hound then for her to try and help people, you know, when she's been killing people all the way throughout the whole series, for her to just rediscover herself. And even the horse at the end, which was... as you said, Neus ex machina, and very cheesy and sort of a bit highly improbable, let's just say. And they also lingered on that shot for a bit too long. It was a bit like that bit in Twin Peaks where the horse just shows up in Laura Palmer's front room, for anyone who's seen that. But even putting that to the side, just her escape at the end, no matter what she's going to do next week, I just thought... yeah, I actually wondered in that episode if Jon was going to kill Daenerys because he found Arya's body in the wreckage.
Yeah.
Like, I really thought she might have died in the wreckage and then that would just tip Jon over the edge, which is not what happened, obviously. She didn't die, but I was genuinely afraid for her watching the episode. And given that I knew other people were going to die, and I was kind of just a bit ambivalent about the whole thing now, to have felt fear for Arya is actually saying something.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we're so invested in that sort of thing that I don't want to see her die. You know what I mean? Like, where the expectation is that, like, oh yeah, Jaime's going to die, Cersei's going to die, Now it's kind of like, I don't want Arya to die. Like, yeah. I don't want it. I think she's the only one that, probably Dany as well, but I think for the most part, if I had one to pick, it'd be Arya straight up, because I just don't want her to lose. She's had such a good run, and she's had such a good journey from start to finish, that I think seeing her die in the rumble of King's Landing would be really disappointing. But also, obviously, adds fuel to the fire to Jon, obviously, making his own sort of mad king, you know, turning around and being like, all right, well, Danny's just killed.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't see that happening. But
No. But I think that's obviously... I think it felt like a possibility.
Was there anything else that you liked?
I think when I look at Qyburn getting crushed, that was super satisfying. I fucking hate Qyburn, and that's just really, really sweet to see.
To be honest, I didn't really like that, only because Cersei was like, stay with me, Sir Gregor, and he just ignored her.
Yeah.
And then Qyburn said, you know, obey your queen, and he just flicked him off. And yes, it was funny when he like got smashed, just like literally swatted like a fly and was dead.
Yeah.
But he introduced Qyburn, as in introduced Cersei to reanimated zombie at the end of season 5 when she came back from the Shame Walk. And we haven't seen Sir Gregor since then. We've only seen this zombie mountain.
Yeah.
So it's kind of been implied that he would, and Qyburn even said to Cersei at the end of season 5, you know, he will remain silent until all of your enemies are taken care of. So it was sort of implied that he was like a wight, like he was somehow being manipulated, or he was under Qyburn's control.
Yeah.
And so this episode was basically just said, nope, he can do whatever he wants. Okay, so he's been able to do that the whole time, but has still just stood there silently like a big zombie for no reason. And then also, like, he can clearly remember his life as Gregor, because he can remember whatever it is that is fueling his enmity with Sandor. And I was like, well, for the Hound's point of view, when the mountain pushed your face into a fire when you were a kid, okay, I can understand that a need for revenge has driven you your whole life. I mean, it's not super plausible because you actually found inner peace a few seasons ago, but cool. But I didn't understand what the mountain's motivation to kill him was.
I also think
it was not self-defense, because he was really going at it. And also, on the subject of Clegane Bowl, I did not like him squishing out Sandor's eyes, because when that happened in the mountain and the Viper, he was trying to crush Oberyn's skull.
Skull, yeah.
And it was a decision that he made in the moment because of their positioning in the fight, and it was the most appropriate immediate thing to do in the fight with Oberyn based on the fact that he had him pinned down.
Yeah, pretty much. That's all.
So, and now they're making out like, what, it's fucking his signature move? I was like, no. Like, he's a good fighter who, you know, takes advantage of the situation in the moment. He doesn't just go around like stabbing people in the eye. It's not like it's his thing. So I really didn't like that either. But anyway, sorry, you were going to say something.
Oh, well, I mean, the thing is, you look at how he ignores Qyburn and Cersei. But when he sees the Hound, right? So you feel like, oh, he sees his brother, like his inhibitions just completely drop. But they've seen each other in The Dragon and the Wolf last season. So, like, why is he able to stop there but not here?
Yeah. I'll tell you why. Because D&D wanted Clegane Bowl. That's it.
Well, they say that. They say it in the behind the scenes that they were like, yeah, Clegane Bowl was happening.
They refer to it as Clegane Bowl, which is gross.
Yeah, we won't get too deep into that, just because, yeah, we'll probably be bashing them pretty heavily. In terms of other good stuff...
There's no probably about it.
I don't know if there's anything else that I could think of. Honestly, I will say that the sacking of King's Landing was incredible to watch. That was beautiful. Beautiful.
Oh, and actually, there was another scene that I loved. My favorite part was when Euron and Jaime had their fight.
I knew you were going to say that. You were just looking, you're like, what scene could I say that would fucking piss Nick off?
No, in all seriousness, one of my genuine favorite, like, best parts about this episode was that it was Sansa-less. That was good.
Yeah, you did say that at the end. You were just like, oh my God, we just got like 73 minutes of no Sansa. Yeah, that was and great. Then next week, that's all it's going to be.
Oh my God, and if they fucking make her Queen Sansa in the end.
Honestly, like that's why I'm coming over to watch it next week with you, just so I can see you get up and walk out. I think we talked about this in our preseason primer episode. If Sansa
I'll be so angry.
Yeah.
It would be. So it'll be Jon, but anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything good that I can think of. Maybe there might be something that we can pull out of our next topics, which will be plot holes.
Okay,
how
sure.
How we feeling.
Yep.
So we'll go into the plot holes. There's a multitude of plot holes in this. Where do you want to start?
At the beginning of the episode. Because we start with Daenerys feeling sad.
Yeah.
And I actually watched a really interesting interview online today with a psychologist who was explaining Daenerys' mental state.
Yeah.
And she said there was a difference between mourning and melancholy, according to Freud. And melancholy or melancholic grief, as opposed to mourning, is when it's not when you like miss someone or you're sad they're died. It's that you can't let go of the part of you that was with them. I.e. Missandei saw her as a savior, and she can't bear that the person who saw her as a savior, Missandei, and Jorah, who she loved having the power of the unrequited love in him over her, basically no one, she is not incredible in anybody's eyes anymore.
Yeah.
And she loved keeping people around her who made her feel great in their eyes. So the loss that she's feeling in terms of her melancholic grief is because it's forcing her to confront herself, because she's being deprived of people who look at her and validate her. Yeah. And I thought that was so well put. And I was like, yeah, why did D&D don't explain that?
Yeah.
But anyway, so at the start, that's where she is. And Tyrion looks out of the window and sees Varys talking to Jon, trying to persuade him to take the throne.
Yeah.
Now, there's your plot hole number one.
Yeah.
First of all, Season 1 Varys is a lot smarter than that.
Yeah.
He would not approach someone that he knows is entire identity is based on honor and loyalty and just go up to him and say, oh, I think you should do this.
Yeah,
he
just would abandon be more sneaky. Those. Yeah.
Number two, if he was going to talk to that person about it, why do it in daylight hours in full fucking view of the castle? Like, yeah. You're not that stupid, mate.
Yeah.
And so that was like a big plot hole to begin with. Although, did you notice, because I didn't notice this watching the episode, but I read it today, when he was talking to that little girl.
Yeah.
He was poisoning Daenerys.
Poisoning, yeah.
Yeah, because he was trying to like feed her poison to get rid of her, which was kind of smart. But I'm like, again,
not
why
addressed.
Not wait until she's dead to yeah. go and suggest that Jon presses his claim? Like,
exactly.
Just, like, dude, that was just ridiculous. So yeah, that was plot hole number one, right at the beginning. Anything to say on that?
No, not really. I think for me, like, I got really just upset that they just basically pissed Varys away.
To be honest, Varys had to go because...
Oh, he does, yeah. No.
He is the only surviving member of the original Small Council from the very beginning of the show.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Everybody else who was on the Small Council at the start is now dead. So for the new world to take place, anyone who served under previous monarchs has to go.
That makes sense.
Narratively, Varys has to get fucked off somehow.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think the writers did more disrespect to his character than Daenerys did, to be honest.
Yeah. I think the one that really pissed me off the most, and I'm probably jumping a bit ahead, and it's probably...
I know what you want to say, so just
it's
go
probably
for it.
Less about... less a plot hole, but more just a complete waste of time. But...
Oh, I actually just thought of another plot hole to do with, like, the thing we're talking about.
Okay.
But, sorry, just so that we don't jump ahead too far.
Yeah, go.
Just because this is to do with this scene. I'm so sorry, because I know you were just about to say something.
Okay.
But Tyrion told Daenerys that Varys was betraying her. Why didn't Jon tell her? Varys approached Jon and said, you should... press your claim. So why didn't he go to Daenerys and say, Varys is betraying you?
Well, who knows what the fuck Jon was doing? He walked into the castle and that was the last we saw of him until the beach.
True. Also on the note of that, why are they back at Dragonstone when she was at King's Landing last episode? Like, why are they Dragonstone again? Does she just, like go back and forward between Dragonstone and King's Landing every 1 second?
How does that work in terms of... like, I'm not too familiar in terms of, like, distance between Dragonstone and...
it's
and
okay, it's not that far.
Okay.
That's why when Daenerys is born, like, they escape King's Landing and go to Dragonstone because it's the seat of the Targaryens. It's sort of like... so if Westeros is... like north to south, imagine King's Landing is like on the east coast, right in the middle, and then a little bit further south, like just south of the center. And then Dragonstone is like an island that's like just off the coast of the center.
Yeah, sure.
So you go like sort of northeast a little. It's not that far, but I still don't know why they keep going back and forward.
Yeah, just like, set up a camp like they do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Now you can move on to the next part.
Okay. Man, this is a tough one. Well, it's not tough, actually. It's pretty easy. Doesn't make a lot of sense. But they set up a forward camp at King's Landing, preparing to siege. And then the next day happens, and I'm skipping over quite a bit here, but the next day happens. The Golden Company line up outside King's Landing, ready to defend it. Everyone's sort of, funneling into King's Landing. All of Dany's forces are setting up outside. The Iron Fleet is like basically just protecting everything. Like it looks that again, the Iron Fleet looks great. And then they look into the sky and it's just really bright. And then out of nowhere, Drogon literally torches the whole fucking fleet like that.
And they had some realistically slow turning with the bolts, right?
Yeah.
So
she torches the Iron Fleet. She torches the ballistas on the wall. Now, don't get me wrong. This is a smart strategy because getting rid of the ballistas obviously is priority one because you don't want to lose Drogon, right? That's fine. Knowing that she is capable of doing this and didn't do it in the last episode is probably number two on my egregious list for this episode.
Yeah, agreed. And it's so frustrating that actually... it looks great and it's very smart of her. And I'm like, okay, it's last episode that completely undermines that. It's not even anything that happens in this one. It's because you could have done that already when you had double the number of WODs that you do now.
Yeah.
This does not make any sense at all that it's possible for you when it wasn't possible for you a week ago. And also, actually, there are a lot of things, like when we come on to talk about Daenerys, because I think talking about her is going to be the majority of the podcast. But... when it comes to the dragons, there are a lot of things to do with her where it actually would have been more plausible if she'd had two this episode and lost one of them. And
yes.
It would have been so much better.
Yep.
And it would have been more plausible because there were more weapons and things that were actually prepared to fight her this episode. And also it would have better justified her mental and emotional state. So... To have her have two dragons and half the enemies, just the Iron Fleet with a few shitty bolts, and have Rhaegal die, and then to half her forces and double the defense forces and have her just annihilate them in 1 second is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And also, on that note, what the fuck is the fucking point of the Golden Company, who have been talked about since the beginning of season 7. What is even the point of that?
That was the other thing I wanted to go on to, because I look at Dany and she's torching the fleet, and just on that, Euron literally should have just died in Blackwater Bay and we would have been done with that, and we didn't need that waste of a fucking scene with him and Jaime. We'll get to that later. Her torching the Iron Fleet and watching that, I'm sitting there going, wow, okay, what a waste last week was. Then, the front of King's Landing, there's a bit of tension, and then there's a rumble, and the Golden Company is sort of like a bit worried, like what's going on, and then Drogon literally just goes like straight up the guts and fucking just annihilates them. And Captain Strickland, the Golden Company, who are supposed to be these like the master sellswords, who are led by this fucking cunning captain, literally wiped out in the face, like in like 5 seconds.
And also,
what a fucking waste.
And she's like, they're facing Daenerys' forces outside the front of the gate, and Drogon like burns them from behind. And yet the fire stops like just conveniently short of Daenerys' forces. They're literally facing them.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is not, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like Strickland is turns around. He's like, oh no, oh no. And you're just like, okay, well, what a waste that was. Like, honestly, you could have literally just taken the Golden Company out of it and dumped the Lannister forces out the front.
Yeah. All it you needed have to mattered. Do. Like if they were.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah. If they were just the Queen's Guard. That would be, I guess it was to sound like Cersei had two armies. So if Daenerys has the Unsullied and the Dothraki, Cersei has the Queen's Guard and the Golden Company. But it's like, well, the Golden Company and nothing. So
yeah, because that's the thing. They're supposed to be what this like army of master sellswords who are the best of the best. That's why they charge so much, blah, 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 blah. And then they literally do... They don't do anything.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's not that they get annihilated by the dragon because that's not unrealistic that, you know, like, it could obviously just take them all out. We saw it happen in season 7 with the loot train.
Yeah.
It's that they didn't get a chance to do anything before that happened. We didn't get to see anything.
Yeah.
So why have we had them so hyped?
Exactly. I just don't get it. And that, to me, I'm like... I have an egregious list. There's two things on it. The Golden Company, the waste of the Golden Company, but also just the fucking tactics of that whole sequence. Really fucking bother me. And it also bothers me the fact that Dany does that sort of damage across the wall in the battlements, then lands on the tower. And from memory, she hears the bell and then attacks.
Yep.
So she hears the bell, then attacks the city instead of just going straight to the keep, which to me, I probably would have gone, oh, okay, she's going to go to the keep, torch the keep, Bob's your uncle, everything's fine. Nope. She just decides to ignore the bells because she has AirPods in and torches the fucking city. Now, I have to say, like I said, sacking of King's Landing as a whole, stunning. That to me, watching her do that, I'm like, okay, this is just... What you've done to Dany is not earned at all.
This is not a plot hole. This is Daenerys' character assassination, which is its own thing. So do you want to move on to that or did you have any other plot holes? Because if we start talking about Daenerys' character assassination,
yeah, we're going like, down a hole.
We're just
hey.
Not going to stop. Like, I have so much to say about that.
In terms of like really bad plot holes, I think those like that was my main gripe. I think was just the fact that we got the horrid shit show of last week.
Okay, I don't want to. Yeah. I don't want to like talk about it really at length, but. Euron surviving those ships and then just happening to swim to shore at the exact moment Jaime just happened to be there was just nonsense.
Yes.
Like, the fight itself was nonsense, but as far as plot holes go, that was just absolutely ludicrous.
It was just convenient because for some reason they needed to fight and we needed to see Euron fight. I don't understand
because
what the motivation
is. Because they have, what, some,
there?
Like, long-term built-up enmity? Like,
yeah,
no, they
I don't get it.
Finger in the bum is the only interaction they've ever had.
Yeah. Shout out to the actor for Euron, though. He's it seems like a nice dude.
We're watching his interviews, he does seem like a lovely guy, and yeah. I feel quite sorry for him. Not because of all the money he's made from this show, like, I mean, whatever, but he... I think he's been pretty underutilized and pretty shit on, so...
I think he's actually come onto social media and he's defended, like... Not D&D, but just being like, I would have kind of preferred to be more of like a pirate sorcerer like he is in the book.
Yeah, like imagine if you read the books and then you got cast as Euron Greyjoy and you're like, fucking hell. And then that's what they did
the
to
role
you.
Of a lifetime. And then it's just like,
and then they made you like bargain basement Jack Sparrow.
Yeah, not even funny. Not nothing. He's just crap. He's a fucking useless character like all the Greyjoys.
Okay, so... I think we should start talking about character assassinations because there's a lot of them. I've already talked about Varys's. If you don't mind, I sort of want to save Daenerys's for last because it's the biggest one for me and I think we'll be talking about it for a while.
Okay.
So, yeah, Varys was decimated by the script because book Varys and season 1-4 Varys would never have been so stupid.
Yep.
Even if he ended up getting executed or like found out or discovered, he wouldn't have, you know, been so foolish. Like he would have been tripped up or tricked by someone. He wouldn't have just done it all in plain sight. Tyrion, I think, was annihilated by the script because I do not
understand. He has been for a while.
He has been because he keeps making stupid mistakes. Basically, everything he's... Ever since Daenerys made him Hand of the Queen at the end of season 6, everything he's done has been a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, it's every piece of advice he's given her has gone to shit. But for him to betray Varys to Daenerys, I can understand, even though Varys saved him from the dungeons in season 4, I can't understand why he did it. I don't believe he did it to be loyal to Daenerys. I think he did it because he thought that Jon was going to tell her. And if Jon told her, then she would know that Varys was plotting against him. So she'd know that Tyrion had told him and not told her. So I think when he saw that conversation, he was covering his own arse.
That was, yeah. That
more
was,
than being loyal to Daenerys.
Yeah.
Fine.
I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that.
But then, when he finds out that Jaime's been captured, he betrays Daenerys straight away.
Yeah.
Like,
goes to Davos.
Are you loyal to Daenerys or are you not? And like, and if you think that you're doing this to save millions of people, that's fine. But then why did you have to dole Varys in the first place? Like, just that didn't make any sense to me. Also, on the subject of Lannister character assassinations, Jaime was just destroyed. Like, when we get to talking about predictions later, I will apologize for all of my mistaken predictions on every podcast over the years, including last week that Jaime was actually going to kill Cersei, intentionally so.
Yeah, yeah.
But he says to Tyrion, like, Tyrion says, oh, what about the small folk? And he says, oh, I never really gave a shit about them. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
So then why are you fighting for the living?
Yep. Why are you fighting for the living? Why have you gone to the north? Why did you sit in a bathtub and bare your heart to Brienne and say to her that you would rather be called Kingslayer behind your back and have people snigger at you your whole life than have conducted Aerys's orders and burned King's Landing?
Mm.
Because you did it to save those people at 17 years old. And now, in the final episode, when you're going to be alive, you say, oh, I don't really give a shit about small folk. What the fuck was that?
Yeah, I think Jaime... So this is number one on my egregious list. I think Jaime's... This is really tough. I think Jaime's characterization and his development and his journey over the last... The course of the series.
Yep.
Has been terrific. Literally one of my favorite parts of the show. Jaime became one of those characters that I hated, that I was more less hate and then more intrigue and then more obviously love. Like he turned into like not a hero, but just someone that I was like, you know what, I kind of respect you despite some of the shit that you've pulled over the years. You're at a point in your character where you've gone through it and you've explored these things, you've met new people, you've used that like these new people and their influence to influence yourself. And I find that really important to his growth. And then last week, to have that undone, I sit here and go, okay, I will allow him this week. If he was to kill Cersei this week, I'd be like, okay, that's fine. Probably not how I'd want to end it, but that's fine. Instead, what we got is just him proving that he's just a piece of shit. And he's returning to King's Landing to try and save Cersei. And they die together being crushed by rubble. I think that's fucking absurd. I am so upset that and this is going to sound quite selfish, but I'm so upset that I've spent so much time investing myself in this character only for, for Benioff and Weiss to go, no. We're going to do it this way. And there's no motivation for it. And even that separation scene between him and Brienne last week, that, to me, that whole sequence is now even worse than I thought it was last week.
Same. And I'm also like, why did you put him with Brienne in the first place? Like,
yeah.
It was only one episode ago that he took her virginity. And it was only 3 episodes ago that he made her a knight, and now what the fuck was that with Cersei? Like, ridiculous. And they undid 8 years of character development in 20 minutes.
Yep.
How?
Yeah.
Why? I couldn't understand that.
It's not even explained in the behind, you know, with the game reveal. They generally do a good job, but they actually do say, like, here's the reason we've done this.
Yeah.
No, it's not the best reason, but in that whole sequence, it was like, man, Lena Headey was really good.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, she was. But what about... What's Jamie's motivation? Why?
And I think they even say...
What a fucking waste.
I did see something today where they said he realizes that his tie to her is bigger than he thought. And that was the whole explanation. And I was like...
That's fucking absurd.
Overall, absolutely ridiculous. Like they had an irrevocable breakdown at the end of season 7. And she sent...
Yeah.
She sent Bronn to kill him. It's literally like... It's like they just have forgotten that season 3 onwards ever happened.
Yeah.
It's like they were putting them back together again after those 3 seasons of separation. When they finally get back together at the end of season 3. And I'm like, okay, but... There were 4 years of character development since then, so...
And it's worse because Jamie says to Brienne, and I know I'm still on that point, like, Cersei's hateful and I'm hateful. And I'm like, what? And yep. Then you see that pay off. Sorry, I'm not even going to say it's paid off. It's not paid off. You see that come to an end last night. We're taping this on Tuesday night. I'm like, none of this is justified. None of this... This is unexplainable. This is indefensible. Like, what you've done here is completely... You've just gone, well, we don't know what to do with these two now.
Yeah.
Because we're so focused on Dany's destruction of King's Landing and the battle between these two now, that we're kind of done with these two. So let's crush them.
And if you wanted to go a different way from the books, which it's clear in some things they do want to go a different way from the books, like, I still think... There's a possibility that John might kill... Well, I don't really know what's going to happen with the White Walkers in the books, but...
True.
I don't think it's going to go how it went in the show. Let's just put it that way. Like, there's some things that they want to do differently. And with Jamie and Cersei, they might want to end their story differently than how it's going to end in the books. And I know that because they cut the Valonqar prophecy from the show. There is no Valonqar prophecy, which therefore makes it actually harder to justify her hatred for Tyrion, although I suppose she blames him for the death of her mum in childbirth. But in the books, she's terrified that Tyrion is going to kill her one day because the little brother's going to kill her. But in the show, that prophecy was cut. It's never mentioned. So we don't have to have Jaime killing her the way that it'll probably happen in the books, because the show never set that up. So if you want to do it differently, don't put them back together for no reason in the same sort of scenario that the books are setting up, then only to have him not even carry that out. Like,
yeah.
Like, if he'd gone back to kill her and beat Arya to it, or I'd even have preferred it, although I wouldn't have liked it because it doesn't undo any of those questions that you're asking that are valid and legitimate. But I'd even have preferred it if he mercy killed her.
Well, I was going to say, I remember we were discussing...
Like, even that would have given them both some dignity.
Yeah.
But no. Just... I saw a meme today that was like, who's going to kill Cersei? And it had a picture of Arya, and then a picture of Daenerys, and then a picture of Jaime, and then a picture of a brick.
Of a brick,
that was just like, hold my beer, and I was like, yep.
That's a good meme, I like that.
Speaking of people getting annihilated, Cersei also assassinated as a character by this episode. When Qyburn came to see her when she was looking over the battlements,
yeah.
And
yeah.
She just kept being like, oh... no, everything will be fine. The ballistas will get them. The Lannister guard will fight to the last man. Cut to the Lannisters surrendering. And I was just like, Cersei has made a lot of foolish mistakes over the years because she is arrogant and she is narcissistic. And those traits have led her to make stupid decisions.
Yeah.
But I don't think she's actually stupid.
No,
she's
I don't think so either. I don't think at all.
She's not an idiot.
No.
She just has... made ill-informed, misinformed decisions because of her overweening arrogance and her personality. But in that yesterday's episode, from the very, very little dialogue she had, she was stupid. Well, like straight up and down stupid. And I was like, no.
Well, I think that feeds in nicely to the whole sort of idea that the sacking of King's Landing. Dany rips through and nothing happens. Like, so she's just like, it's fine. It's like the yeah. fucking burning cow's dog meme. This is fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything is falling around behind her. The mountain standing behind her being like, yes. And Qyburn's like, it's okay. And then it's like, oh shit, nah, it's not okay. And it's just like, what are you doing? Like, this is so fucking idiotic.
I saw a thing on that behind the scenes episode today where it was like, oh, you know, she realizes she's all alone. She's got no one left. And I was like, well, she didn't have anyone anyway. She had Qyburn and Gregor. That's it. That's not right. She lives in the Red Keep. Where is everybody? Yeah. Like, where are all the servants? Where's the court? Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's been like that for a while too. Like, she's just been lonely in the keep.
Yeah.
And I think there's... It's an interesting point because I didn't really think too much about Cersei after the episode. I think she was more of an afterthought for me because she doesn't really have a lot to do here. She has a couple of moments, and I'll give the show credit when Dany is basically weighing up whether she wants to torch King's Landing. There's an intercut between those two, which I thought was quite effective because it builds up a sense of what Cersei got planned. And then you're like, okay, this is kind of cool. This is kind of cool. And then she has nothing planned.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think of all characters, Cersei's been shit on the most this season because Daenerys was shit on the most this episode. But if you take this episode out of it, she's not been shit on the whole season and she's had a lot more screen time. Cersei has been really crapped on. And I think part of the reason for that is because, again, in the books, I think it's likely that Daenerys won't come to King's Landing to fight Cersei. I think she'll come to King's Landing to fight Aegon, who is not Jon. Aegon Targaryen, different person. Although also ostensibly her nephew, but probably not.
Yeah.
And Varys will be in charge then, because Aegon is just Varys's puppet king.
Yeah.
And I think it's him that she's going to have to fight. And because of that, because that's probably the way the books are going to go, but Lena Headey's been so good, the show has elevated her character. Then they're like, oh, we don't know what to do with her now because she's not supposed to be here. Yeah. So we'll just... And even the part I was saying to you before we started recording, even the way she died was insulting. Not just under rubble, but as I said to you, at the end of season two, at the Battle of the Blackwater, she was ready to give her children, who were just kids, like poison pills, and then take some herself.
Yeah.
When she was getting abused and tortured and deprived of water in the dungeons by Septa Anela... She looked her in the face after weeks of physical and mental deprivation and said, my face will be the last face you see before you die. She's not the kind of woman who looks out the window and says, oh, this is fine. And then at the last second runs down to the keep and says, oh, please, I don't want to die. Not like this. Not like this. What the fuck was that?
But this is the same woman that looked out the keep and watched the Sept of Baelor blow up. Like, she's the mastermind between, like, of the bombing of the Sept.
Yeah.
Which I... Just as a viewer, I'll always say that is one of the greatest moments the show's ever done, is the bombing of the Sept. And it's also, that was something that she'd been masterminding with Qyburn for so long.
Yeah.
And I fully expected her to execute a similar plan this week.
Yeah.
If she died doing it, great. She didn't, great. I don't care. But that's the Cersei that I know and I've known for years.
Yeah, it's not a Cersei running for a rowboat on a beach. She wouldn't leave. No. Like, she would genuinely, like, the book Cersei and old TV show Cersei, she would rather die than run away.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I'm just like, why are you... But the truth is that she'd rather die than run away, and yet they still force lines into her mouth like, I don't want to die. And I was like, fuck off. Fuck off. You're shitting on Cersei and you're shitting on Lena Headey. This is crap. Thank God that she gets 500 grand an episode because you're just shitting on her.
Yeah.
Before we move on to Daenerys, anyone else who got shit on?
Look... Arya honestly was fine.
Arya was amazing.
The Hound was the Hound was complete. That's as far as I go. Jon, I think was idiotic, but we all knew that. So
yeah, that
doesn't
change anything.
And Davos as well just appears. Grey Worm, I don't really care for. So, I'm pretty good to go on to Dany.
Okay.
Yeah. Where do you want to start? Because this is obviously the biggest thing, because Dany, as a character, Dany has, on the show, I've only read 2.5 of the books, but on the show did do a pretty solid job of having her try to balance her power, her empathy, and her control over her inhibitions. and that is almost completely tossed out the window when she decides to burn everyone.
Yep.
Now, I'm okay with that. When I look at this in sort of a scope as from the longevity of the show, from the start to the finish, The problem is that season 8 has been so rushed that this end here, this decision of her character to do this, is not at all earned. She's not earned this to... the show has not earned this. The only reason they're doing it is because it's like, oh shit, we've, like, Benioff and Weiss are like, we're done here. We don't want to do this anymore. So we're going to get her to sack King's Landing. Which, I agree with you. I totally think it's happening in the books. Like, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot today. And I think, even though last week I said, idealistically, I want Daenerys to sit on the throne, thematically, it's right that she sacks King's Landing. And it has, in the books, been set up from the start. For starters,
yeah.
It's called A Song of Ice and Fire, right?
For a reason.
So,
yeah.
Ice and Fire are the two opposite extremes of WMDs. George R. R. Martin is very clear about his anti-war sentiments. He was a conscientious objector during Vietnam.
Wow.
And
I didn't know that. That's cool.
That's why he started writing the books, because he is really, really strongly anti-war. And he wants to show the horrors of war. And I think it is... If Daenerys came back from overseas and reclaimed the throne, all that does is reiterate the idea of entitlement of an absolute monarch, someone who has the right to rule. And she doesn't have the right to rule. Her ancestors came and conquered 300 years ago, and she's going to be another conqueror. And I think George R. R. Martin's point is that no one person truly has the right to rule over other people. That's why they all keep saying power resides where men think it resides. And she believes that she has this right because her ancestors obliterated people. Like, he's trying to say absolute monarchy is wrong, and class hierarchy is wrong, and noble houses are wrong, and this and wars that will pit the small folk against each other to put a very powerful person in charge because they can command armies is wrong. So if there's an anti-war message in the books and the White Walkers represent ice and she represents fires and they're both extremes of WMDs, yes, I can see that, of course, she's got to sack King's Landing, and of course the White Walkers are a misdirect.
Yeah.
And that's how it is going to go. But there seem to me to be two main responses online today to the episode. One was, how on earth could you treat a woman like this in terms of female representation? This is so wrong because a woman in charge, a woman in power, is just being denigrated as hysterical, emotional, going crazy. And that's a gross female trope. This is so anti-feminist. The other extreme is, if you thought this was going to have a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention. They all keep referring to this
Ramsay Bolton line.
I've seen about four articles at least that start with that line. Then basically they list off all the things that Daenerys has ever done or all the things that she's ever said. Like, for example, she walked out of a fire in season one. She burned Vase Dothrak. She burned the Dosh Kaleen. She burned the Loot Train. She burned the Tarleys. She said, I will take what is mine with fire and blood. Yeah. And they all keep pointing to all these foreshadowing things and basically saying, if you didn't know she was going to do this, you're an idiot. And I have really mixed feelings, and I sit right in the middle of both of those things. I think the people who say you should have seen this coming are wrong, because for everything that they say, I'm so sorry to blab on.
No, but for everything that they say
about the pointing to she burned this, she burned that, she did this, she did that, I can counter that easily. She burned the Tarleys. She's not insane. That was a decision that she made. She burned her enemies. They point to her crucifying the maesters, the slave masters in season four. She crucified the exact number of masters of slaves that they had crucified. She has always made active choices about how she deals with and how she addresses her enemies. One of the things that David and Dan said was that when she saw Viserys get his gold crown, that she just stood there and watched. I mean, that's so chilling that she was so cold. And I was like, well, yeah, like, she was cold. She's calculated. She's not some lunatic. This just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and she knows that Viserys is also a fucking animal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so everything that is pointed to why it's obvious that Daenerys was going to go insane is wrong. And I think the reason, or I could counter it at least. And you could say the same thing about Arya if you wanted to. Look at the things that she's done.
Yeah.
You know, like you could easily say, oh, well, you know, she was always going to go this way. But or, you know, even things that Jon has done in the name of like leadership and power, not power per se, but, you know, like hanging people and stuff because they disobeyed him. And even in this episode, she still made a conscious choice. She still made a decision in a split second moment. And that decision was where the entire decimation of her character hinges on why she did that. The other end of the scale, people who say it's anti-feminist, I also think that is garbage. Because women are people. Women are humans. And humans are flawed and complex. So what? You only ever want your female characters to be perfect and logical and be able to make rational choices at all times because women have been oppressed for centuries. So now we have to represent women as ideal. That's absolute horseshit. So I don't agree with either of those things. And I think thematically it's right that she sacked King's Landing, but to maybe try and surprise the audience, the writers have really inconsistently portrayed her character across the years so that the foreshadowing wasn't too predictable. And what has come out of that is that they just completely botched the job. Yeah. And in the worst way possible, they have taken her to this point in a way that is so implausible. As you said, part of the problem is that it's rushed. But also, even if you want to make her the Mad Queen, and even if she has to sack King's Landing because that's the way the story's going, why the fuck did she do it when she did, right after the surrender? Like,
yeah.
Aerys, her father, was the Mad King, and there's been all this talk about Mad Targaryens, but he had years of paranoia, and he believed that when the city burned, he was going to turn into a dragon. Like, he had...
He was insane.
Yeah, he lost his grip on reality. He was actually mad. There's been no gradual build-up for her to do that, and she made a conscious choice, so she was not unaware of the reality around her. And what David and Dan said in the behind the scenes was that she decided to make it personal because it wasn't what she thought it was going to be. What?
That's not personal at all.
Right. That's my point. How on earth is obliterating the small people that you're supposed to be coming to liberate personal?
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? There was no cause. And I could think of 100 million better ways that you could have done it. Like, for example, maybe she still has two dragons this week. The bells ring for the surrender. She brings her dragons into land, happy. Misa.
Yeah.
I've come to save you.
Like, that's it, I'm here.
Right? And then, fucking out of nowhere, because, I mean, that's still fine. We're still living in out of nowhere world in Game of Thrones. Out of nowhere, fucking Euron shows up and just...
Yeah,
to the dragon, because it's flying close to the ground now. And she believes that the surrender is a trick. Even though Euron's renegade, she doesn't know that, and she thinks that the surrender is just a trick to trap her and her forces.
Yeah.
So she goes apeshit and just starts, because she's just lost her dragon in front of her, and because she feels confused, you know, and she's like, oh my God, the people on the ground are just tricking me. They're actually going to betray me if I land. So she starts burning the place up. That would make sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it would make more sense than the way that she lost her dragon last week. Like, why on earth did she make that decision after the surrender? And even if she wanted to still make sure that she killed Cersei after the surrender, like, she could have just gone straight for the Red Keep. Like, I'm going to kill these people because they don't truly love me, so I'll make them love me by burning them.
The fight to me is a fight between her and Cersei, not her and the people.
Yeah.
So the only tactic she should be having is, I'm going to torch the Red Keep, then that's it. Because once the Red Keep falls, they don't have a ruler. That's it. So the bells are rung, or however it works. So I look at that as a thing going, okay, well, why don't you do that? I get that she's driven by this, but I don't think... I'll always come back to the point that her decision-making here is not at all...
in keeping with her character?
No, and it's not at all earned. Because we haven't, like... in the space of 2 weeks, we've just seen her lose all her best friends and all her advisors and basically get depowered. I think I mentioned on last week's episode is that the show needed to depower her because she's so like at that stage, she has little, like, you know, at the end of last season, she has three dragons and literally the best advisors that you could ask for on top of one of the largest forces the world's ever seen. And then the show's like, oh, shit. But then it doesn't matter because she still fucking executes everyone in King's Landing anyway. So all of that is just for naught. So I think when I look at Dany here, really quick, I think Emilia Clarke sells that pain. It's a pain choice. Absolutely. And she does an incredible job of going, like, she's breathing through it. And she, honest, I'm watching her and I'm like, I know she's going to do it. I know she's just going to torch it. But she sold it. I'm just like, she's really struggling to decide.
Watching that on behind the scenes. Because when you saw her on a fucking bucking bronco in a room full of like just green walls, I was like, wow. Like, I thought you did a good job when I watched the episode, but now I see what you were doing at the time. Like, she is a phenomenal actress.
Yeah, really. Honestly, like, I cannot praise her enough. In that moment, she just sells it perfectly.
But I still, I guess maybe it's because we don't have the inner monologues of the book, but I still just don't get why. Like,
if
the people had betrayed her or rejected her in some way, like, I would understand. You know, she's just like, I've come.
But she doesn't give him the opportunity to do it.
She's like, I've come to my home, you know, like, you should all love me. You should all be like, Misa, Misa, me. But I'm like, well, yeah, you're right. She didn't give them any opportunity to do that. And also, like, even at the beginning of the whole show, when Illyrio Mopatis is telling Viserys that people drink secret toast to a Targaryen restoration. Yeah. Daenerys knows that is a lie. She's smarter than Viserys and she's like, I don't believe you. Like, they don't care about us. They just care about, you know, like, making sure that they're fed and watered, and, you know, they are not interested in who really sits on the throne, and you're just saying this to try and, like, bolster Viserys' ego.
Yeah.
Okay. So why, 8 years later, is that what you expect when you go to Westeros? Why do you think they've all been, like, you know, toasting you secretly for years, waiting for you to come back? Like,
yeah.
If you've got to know that's not what's going to happen. You're an invading conqueror. Like, oh, I just...
And we don't get... This is the thing. Dany doesn't get a lot of screen time. It's pretty short. Like, once she starts torching King's Landing.
Oh, you mean in the episode? Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. In the episode, Dany doesn't get much screen time.
That's because they can't justify her decision.
No.
Like, they said it's because after she makes the decision, they wanted to focus on the small people so you could see what she was doing to them and what it all looked like from their point of view.
I do appreciate that.
Yeah, like, she's a dot in the sky to them.
Yeah.
I get that. But also, it's because...
It's because if she landed and someone goes, what are you doing? She'd be like,
But I do wonder, like, someone has to talk to her next week. Like, what is she going to say? How is she going to explain her decisions?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I don't know. I don't know how she justifies it. I'm really curious because I have absolutely zero faith that it's going to be justified.
Yeah, I'm really cut, actually, because I can see now, in retrospect, that it's where the story, the arc of the entire thing is going. And they just did such a fucking botched job of getting it there.
Yep.
A real botched job right up until the point where she does it. Like, all the episodes leading up to that, and then also in that episode, they fucked it. And the worst part is, they've known since before they started filming the entire show that this is how it was going to end. They've been planning to get towards this point, and how could you fuck it up so badly?
That's it. It's such an important... There are shows that I can recall vividly in terms of characterization, like Halt and Catch Fire... has a marvelous arc for Carrie Bechet's character, Breaking Bad. These sort of pinnacles of golden age of television have those moments where the creators, whether or not they've known it from the beginning or not, have executed those character arcs perfectly. And you get a satisfying end to whatever the story is. The fact that D&D, like you said, have known this, and then have decided to go, nah, this is better.
That's why I hate when people are just like, oh, you must have always seen this coming. Like, you haven't been paying attention.
That's bullshit.
I'm just like, no, don't condescend to me. Like, it's so condescending. You can point to all the examples of the things that she's done that have foreshadowed this, but her characterization has been way too inconsistent for that to stand up for me.
Exactly. And the thing is, and this kind of full circles me back to the start of her character, Dany has always struggled balancing power, control, and obviously like her family, like her lineage, the fire and blood. She's always tried to suppress that because I think it's one of those things that she doesn't, she wants to rule differently. That's the thing. That's her whole spiel. I want to rule differently. I want to break the wheel. And here, it, like anyone that says, you should have seen this coming. It's like, well, you probably would have if we got to see more of those nuances and her struggling to fight those nuances.
It's like, how should you have seen it coming? Because what we got wasn't her.
No.
It's just not her because there was no struggle for balance.
No.
There was no compassion. There was no inkling of what her motivation has been for the whole show, which is, as you say, to do things differently and not just to be like a renegade conqueror. It just didn't make any sense with what she claims to have stood for years.
Yep.
It was just nonsense. And it was such disrespect to Emilia Clarke.
You can see, it was interesting, or before we move on to the predictions, in the behind the scenes, there's a moment when they're shooting Varys getting torched, and you could, I don't know if it's just me being the body language doctor, but I was like, it was kind of clear that she didn't like what she was doing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's just my read on that for like the split second because I'm an expert. I read that and I was like, yeah, she doesn't look like she's
super into
happy or into it, like as locked in. And then obviously the memes of her being like, oh, the greatest season of all time, you know, like all those sort of memes, like... Yeah, I agree. They've done a complete disservice to a lot of characters here.
I just wish they'd plausibly led it to this point because there are things about it that are good. You had a phenomenal actress at your fingertips.
Yeah.
You had all that visual effects because the sacking of King's Landing looked amazing. The story is obviously going that way and has to go that way. And it's really cool that it does go that way. And you just set it up and then executed it so poorly.
Yeah.
Like, you just killed her. Like, it's crap.
Yeah.
And how on earth are they going to resolve it in one episode as well? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I'm really curious to see. Your partner Dan mentioned yesterday, he's like, I reckon the episode is going to be way longer than they've announced it to be.
Oh, 1,000%
I would probably put money on that because they have so much work to do to resolve this.
Yeah.
And if they're going to try and resolve it in a feature film next week, good luck.
So, on that note then, predictions, what do you reckon?
My current prediction is either Arya or Jon kills Dany. Sansa becomes Warden of the North. I'm sorry.
That's good. It's better than her being Queen of the Seven Kingdoms.
I think Tyrion either survives somehow, and either he's got two options. Survives and goes to the North and hangs out with Sansa because they're good friends or marrying or whatever. Or they form some form of council at whatever remains at King's Landing or something like that. Tyrion, I'm a little bit iffy on. I'm not 100% sure because, like, if he dies, he dies. I don't really care. I still really buy into the theory that Jon will just exile himself to the Wall.
See, I am not good at predictions. At the end of season 6, I said Cersei is going to die in season 7 so that season 8 will be all about the White Walkers. And during season 7...
That's a solid prediction.
It didn't happen.
Well, I know.
During season 7, I said Arya and Sansa are fighting for real because Sansa's a fucking moron. And then she turned to Lord Baelish and was like, how do you answer the charges, Lord Baelish? And then last
week... Do you not knock that scene? That is a good scene.
Not the scene. Me saying that the whole lead up
right,
to
Yeah.
The whole lead up to that entire scene, all season, I was like, yep, Sansa's a fucking idiot. Sansa's a fucking idiot. Her and her, like, why is she Arya's throat? She's a fucking idiot. And then, like, that happened. Last week, I spent 15 minutes going on and on and on about how Jaime was going to kill Cersei and, like, he was just protecting Brienne. So clearly, I am fucking shit at predictions.
Can I be just really quickly?
Yeah.
I did feel pretty good about that when...
What, that I was wrong?
Yeah. When you were after the episode, you were like, well... I was wrong there, and I was just like...
Yeah, because I sat there being like, how on earth could anyone not see what was going to happen? I have so much conviction, and everybody who thinks that Jamie's just a jerk is just an idiot. Shit. Like, it was so obvious in the writing. So obvious that it didn't fucking happen. So, yes, I am not good at predictions, clearly.
Yeah. Well, how are you feeling? Is there one that you feel, like, really set on?
Yes, you're right in what you say. John or... Arya are going to kill Daenerys.
Yep.
And I would be equally happy with either. Jon, because it would make Azor Ahai true.
Yeah, of course.
It would also mean that you know, it would buy into that White Walkers were a misdirect thing. The true danger to humanity was her, and he has to kill the woman he loves, so it fits in with that Nissa Nissa thing, but also to protect the world from the big danger, which is actually her.
Her, yeah.
The problem with that, I think, is that if that was the case, he's done a fucking shit job of being Azor Ahai because he didn't save the world from her. It's too late. The horse has already bolted, mate, or yeah. The dragon's already breathed or whatever. So you had one job, Azor Ahai, and you didn't fucking do it. You're crap.
Yeah.
So that could be the way it goes. But I really like the idea of Arya being Azor Ahai because
yeah.
They focused in season 7, the prince or princess who was promised, and they pushed all that gender crap to make Daenerys think it was her. But maybe it is a woman and it's Arya because Azor Ahai, the prophecy goes, will be born in salt and smoke. And there are a lot of characters in the books that could be born in salt and smoke refers to, but Arya was just in a city that was on fire that is surrounded by sea. And she was reborn because she was like lying there asleep, like you thought she was dead, and then she woke up again. Mm. So she's literally in a city of ash with water all around her.
Yeah, I buy that.
So you could be Azor Ahai. And if she was Azor Ahai, and I mean, it might sort of undercut her moment with the Hound, where like they were talking about how, you know, she can walk away from revenge, and now she's rediscovered her humanity, and then she just commits revenge again. So I don't know. I don't know how they're going to resolve a monarchical structure, because I don't think that they can have an absolute monarch or an absolute ruler anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
no, they can't. No.
And so if that's the case, how do you set up a democratic system in one episode? Maybe every one of the Seven Kingdoms just goes back to being fractured again.
Yeah.
Like, so there are seven separate kingdoms again, because it was Aegon Targaryen who united the seven kingdoms in the first place. Like, they were all seven separate kingdoms until he came and conquered, took them all over, except Dorne. They just married into Dorne, but then he united the continent of Westeros. So maybe a Targaryen did that and a Targaryen has ended it.
Mm.
They'll all just be separate feudal systems again. I don't know. But yeah, definitely Daenerys is for the chop.
Yeah, she's done.
Jon or Arya will do it. I really don't want Sansa and Tyrion as the end game. I don't like that at all.
For my own satisfaction, I hope she becomes queen just for you.
Really? Is my disgust worth the ending of the whole of Game of Thrones? Because I'm a little flattered.
Look, honestly, at this stage, yeah,
she's so good. She's the worst, man. Like, how can anybody like her? All she does is side eye and glare at people and say really obvious things as if they're smart.
Mm.
And that's all she does. Mm. She's reversed Maisie Williams' acting journey. Like, Maisie Williams has gone from good to incredible. And Sophie Turner's gone from good to abysmal. Like, she's just gets worse and worse with every year that goes by.
We did really well. How long did we get into the show before you mentioned Sansa on a deeper level?
Well, she wasn't even
about an hour 10
in the episode.
It's good. Yeah, well, not even in the episode. Yeah, I don't know how. That's the thing. I don't know how to feel about Sansa and Tyrion resolving. I don't know.
Say that this is the first time ever that I have been genuinely, truly happy that the Tyrell's dead, because
they don't exist in this universe anymore.
True.
Yeah.
Absolute truth. I don't want the Tyrells in a situation where they're being written in season 8 of Game of Thrones, because everyone has just been decimated, and it would just be worse for them to have been decimated and do these stupid uncharacteristic heel turns than it would for them just to have died two seasons ago.
Yeah.
So I'm not, for the first time, I'm happy the Tyrells are not in it, and that's a big call.
Do you think Bronn gets Highgarden? Not that I really give a shit.
Who cares?
Yeah. But do you? Yes or no?
Do I think he gets it?
Yeah.
No, because
I hope he dies.
The person who promised it to him was Tyrion, and what right does Tyrion have to give it to him now? Like, what authority does Tyrion have?
Who knows? Maybe that's the resolution on their arc. Oh, ugh, God, who gives a shit? Ugh,
maybe Bronn crossbows Tyrion because he doesn't get Highgarden.
That'd be pretty good, actually.
I wouldn't, like, put it past season 8 at this point.
Yeah, I mean, Danny could literally spawn 2 more dragons. I'd be like, oh, okay.
Well, that's been going around the internet as well.
There's more dragons?
Yeah, Drogon laid eggs while he was, like, dicking around in season 5.
Oh, I did hear, I had heard things that it was, like, there may be eggs out in the wild. No. But they'd never... How dragons worked in terms of laying eggs.
I also heard that Daenerys was going to turn into a dragon. So, like, there's a lot of nonsense going on.
Where the fuck were you when you... Where were you looking when you saw that?
The internet's bonkers, man.
You went deep internet. That's some, like, darkness shit.
Yeah. So, look, I think, bottom line, the last 2 seasons needed to be 5 seasons, in all seriousness.
Well, that was the thing George R. R. Martin said.
He's right. He is right. Yeah. Like, to take her to this point, plausibly... And have her get there and have me invest in her and believe that that could happen and even understand why she's doing it, even if I don't agree with her. Do you know what really disturbed me, though? Like, there were a lot of people on the internet who were like, oh my God, I can't believe you did this to this female character, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, whatever. But there were also a lot of people on Twitter and in blogs and memes who were just like, yes, like, I understand why you did this. I'd have done the same thing. Like, you know, all these people who are like bashing Daenerys for what she did, you know, like, I totally understand where she's coming from. And I'm like, are you fucking for real? Like, she just committed genocide. And the whole point of the entire episode and arc, whether or not you think it was done well or justified or whatever, was to show the futility and abject horror of war. And you can just blithely be like, yeah, like, cool, she was right. And I'm just like, okay, if you take that attitude and put it in a real world context, do you seriously justify, like, global scale conflict and just be like, oh yeah, genocide, that's cool? Yeah. Like, what the fuck? Like, I just couldn't believe how many people were on board with her. And I know it's just a show, but I was like, did you miss the point entirely? And also, like, do you have a soul? Do you have a heart? Like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, and this is the thing, it's like that whole argument of like, oh, it's just war, and it's like, you're looking at it on the absolute surface.
Yeah,
I don't think this show, even in its current state, is a show that should be looked at on the surface. It should be critically analyzed. It should have in-depth conversations like we've had tonight.
But I mean, even if you just looked at it at a base level, it's simple. It's got one message. It's an anti-war message.
Mm.
Like. Don't get me wrong, I don't think it's got one level. It's got, like, lots of layers. It's very complex. But if you were just to take away one thing, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And I was just like, how on earth can you empathize with her decisions? Even the actress who plays her doesn't get it.
No, that's right.
So how the fuck can you just be like, yeah, cool?
Yeah, I think people are just like, it's like, for them, they just only see Cersei, and it's like, well, Cersei's losing everything, so lol, yas.
Or all the people who say, oh, why do you feel sorry for the people of King's Landing? They're the people who cheered when Ned got his head cut off and cheered when Tyrion got put in jail. And I'm like, they don't know him. They don't know all the things we know about those characters. Like, they don't have any sympathy with Ned. They think that he was a traitor. They think that Tyrion committed regicide. Like, they're just people. They're just humans who are just being fed crap like we all are. It's not as if they watch Game of Thrones and then are like, and then just go to fucking the town square and jeer while Ned gets his head cut off. Like, they don't understand what you're saying. And like, I've just seen so much of it today. Oh, if you feel sorry for the people of King's Landing, remember what they did. And I'm like, you're fucking morons.
These people are fucking innocent.
Absolutely.
That's it.
And she had no reason to do that.
No.
Like, even those people are innocent. And whether they are or whether they aren't, whether they were fighting on Cersei's side, their side had already surrendered. So
that's it. They dropped arms, and then then it's like, okay,
there is no justification for what Daenerys did, and that was the point, and that was why it was unearned, because she has not ever led us to the point where we'd believe she would do something unjustifiable.
Yeah. Nope.
And yet, people are still finding a way to justify it, and I think that is chilling.
Yeah, I think it's also. Not to get too elitist, but I think some people don't understand. And I think
How could you not understand after watching that episode? Like, if you'd never seen it before, just... You could watch it on mute and you could, like...
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised.
It was a visual representation of the horrors of war.
Have you seen... And some of the stuff that, like, you and I are obviously so keenly entrenched in Game of Thrones at the moment. There's some, like, wild shit that people have been saying. So, I honestly wouldn't put it past someone to think on that sort of level. I don't know. It's tough because, like, if the show can't, like you said, the show just cannot justify it. There's no way. There's no feasible way that I can think of. Probably not right now, that would make me go, you know what? Her listening for the surrender bells and then torching King's Landing, that makes sense. It doesn't.
It doesn't.
Just flat out doesn't make sense. It's not earned because we've not seen, like you said, any sort of hint at her where it's like, fuck, we need to tread lightly here because this could trigger something in her that would, like...
Absolutely. And everything she's ever done, even if you disagree with it, on any given example, was calculated, was a conscious decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
To make a point to her enemies. Mm. These people weren't her enemies. And there is no justification that's ever led me to believe that she could or would do this, despite the fact that that is where the story has always been intended to go. So they fucked up real bad in that case.
Yeah. We should wrap it up. How are you feeling after digesting after 24 hours? We watched the episode 24 hours ago.
I read something online today. Game of Thrones finished at the Winds of Winter. And I think that's right. And I'm really sad about that.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day.
In terms of the visual effects, the Winds of Winter, the bombing of the Sept of Baelor from the beginning of the episode to it happening lasted 11 minutes, and we actually got about 2.5 minutes of, like, WMD footage.
Yeah, crazy shit, yeah.
We had that for the entire episode last night. So, in terms of visual effects, it should have been a phenomenal episode, and because the writing just completely undercut it, The Winds of Winter was still a better episode. And
oh, by far.
They've just, like... Yeah, the last two seasons have just been such a big disappointment.
Mm. I do have to admit, Raman Djawadi's score in this is incredible.
I should have said that, actually. I completely forgot about that.
Another thing I completely missed in the review as well.
And the only...
It's stunning. Stunning.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
And the little throwbacks to Light of the Seven, like, but not quite the same. Like, yep. It was very cool. I think the only arc that was well written that I liked how and where it took their character was Arya. I thought that was really well done.
Yep.
Apart from that, it was literally like everybody who we've invested in as a person for 8 years was just defecated on.
Yeah.
And it's so sad.
And the thing is, I still stand by my decision in saying last week's is still a worse episode. I think this week's episode for me is more... It's disappointing.
And I'm sick of people just saying, like, especially again online, like, oh, if you don't like the way Game of Thrones has gone, like, if you're salty about it, people are just whinging and bitching because the story didn't go how they wanted it to. And I'm like, that is not true. Like, you can be surprising, you can be shocking, you can be unpredictable, you can repeat synonyms. But, like, you can write character well that works in terms of plot. And it might not be what people expect or what they even what they want, but it still works. And yep. This just doesn't work.
No, this episode as a whole doesn't
work. It's not about people bitching because it didn't go how they foresaw it. It didn't go in a way that made logical, cohesive sense.
No. And I think for me, it's a disappointing episode. I do think I think the episode as a whole is a total misfire, and I disliked it. But the thing is, there are some redeeming moments in Arya and the Hound and
it's a shame because, as you say, the sacking of King's Landing was great. All they had to do was set up Daenerys' fall better and cut that Euron Jaime stuff and have Jaime and Cersei die in a better way, and it would have been great.
I was going to say, I think if those are pretty much it. If we fix those, I'd probably be sitting here being like, that's probably one of my favorite episodes of Game of Thrones.
Same. Yeah, if it was just, you know, if we just watched it on mute and just like... superimpose, like, you know, subtitled our own script, I could do a better job.
Yep.
It's the script that was the problem, and not the problem, like, the big, massive King's Landing size crater.
I would love to pull a Topher Grace and actually get an episode of the... grab a copy of the episode and recut it myself.
Oh, yeah?
I would actually be genuinely curious to see how some things play out if I sequence them differently. I won't go into them now because we're now 20 in, but I feel like if I'm motivated enough, I can, that'd be a project that I want to move on
and yeah, try. Yeah, I mean, I think one thing...
to see how it cuts.
One thing that would be good if you did that would be to, like, really extend the cuts of the horse. I don't think we had enough time with her staring at the horse.
Yeah, well, that's such a huge fucking...
yeah, I think I need moment. At least 45 minutes of that.
Jesus. Yeah. Why just watch The Saddle Club? That was too easy. But yeah, I think that, yeah, that was... man, I don't know. I don't know when I'm going to watch that episode again. I'll probably watch it before next week, but I don't feel good.
Yeah, and it's not because
I think our silence says a lot.
Yeah, because, you know, all this shit about, like, oh, your queen didn't do what you wanted her to. Like, yeah, you know, oh, I guess Daenerys is not such a bae. I'm like, no, it's not. It's none of that shit. Like, it just, as you said, it just wasn't earned. It wasn't in keeping with the character they've created. She was annihilated, and it was disgusting. Like, I will watch it again, and I liked things about it, but the way her character was just done such a disservice is just so disappointing.
Yeah, it really is. Anyway, I think we'll do it. That'll do us for this week. Thanks for coming on to the show, John. Is there anything else? I'm giving you one last shot, one last opportunity.
It's just so sad. Like,
yeah, it's depressing.
I mean, if anyone's listening to this podcast, they'll probably just be like, well, that's it, the end, thanks for listening. Like, yeah, it's just, I've just got nothing.
We don't I don't feel, yeah, the thing is, like, we don't have anything to cut out on. It's going to be like, I'm going to be going into doing the read now for the show, and that's it.
Is your review out?
Yes, the review is out. So we're taping this on Tuesday night. The review is out. I wrote it very haphazardly last night. The thing is, it's shorter than my previous reviews. I didn't have a lot to say because I felt like I needed to project it on the podcast.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of my thoughts that are diluted onto that. A lot more swearing and stuff and that sort of thing. So I'll be posting that one in the morning, and I'll be posting the podcast in the afternoon. So you guys can get all your fix that way. But the review, I sat there and I was like, man, I don't really have a lot to write.
Yeah.
Like, I thought, because generally, like, The Long Night, like, clocked into 2000, and Last of the Starks was a bit shorter because I was just like, I didn't really want to talk about this episode. But this one, I was like, I don't have much to talk about because, honestly, there's just a lot of time where we're just seeing action.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot that happened. Yeah. Yeah. Which is a fair point. Well, I mean, I guess, look, we'll be back for the last episode next week, and then we'll do a wrap-up episode. I think we should do a wrap-up a few weeks later so that we can just, like, not do a really salty overview with, like, the bad taste of season 8 still in our mouths. Maybe watch some old, like, great episodes to just, like, reignite the love of it.
Yeah.
And remember how good it used to be. But, yeah, beyond that, It's really gone out with a whimper, not a bang, which is shit.
So Maester Hugh is probably going to come back on the show at some point with some of those episodes as well. So keep an ear out because he is a voice similar to ours in terms of...
I love Hugh.
Yeah. So yeah, keep an ear out for that. So we've got one episode next week, which will be the absolute final episode that we're covering of the show. And then we've got a couple more episodes that we're sort of planning and just returning to the show after the fact, after a couple of weeks, letting ourselves... have a break, I think.
Yeah.
Because we kind of need it. Like, we've been so engrossed by the...
I want to be hyped to do it straight away. I want to be hyped to be like, yes, like, the show's over. Like, let's recap. Let's revisit how incredible this, you know, cultural zeitgeist thing was. But I'm not hype. I'm gutted.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it'll be interesting to see how we're feeling in a month, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, as always, you can get us on Apple Podcasts, Definitely Not Popcorn Podcast, and What the Hell Is This Show, both going on both feeds and on Spotify and on Wooshka. If you have any reviews or anything, or if you want to comment on it, keep an eye on our Facebook pages. We're posting all this stuff, so you can discuss there. Hit us up in our DMs. I have a friend of mine, Robin from Canada, who I've been talking to frequently on DMs on Instagram. She's been had really fun talks about Game of Thrones and like the cultural zeitgeist. It's really awesome. So, but yeah, man, we got one episode left, and I don't feel excited, which is bizarre.
Yeah, me either.
Yeah, what a bummer. Anyway, thank you so very much for coming on the show, John.
Thanks for having me.
We'll see you guys next week.
See ya.